Two Endeavors. Kick it, boys. Good afternoon, Radioland, and welcome to Endeavors on CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, up atop Simon Fraser University. It's a beautiful April afternoon. Feels good to be back live in the studio. A little strange, but a welcome return. My first year of theater school is over and done with. Hopefully I'll be live more often throughout the summer. We're also on the internet at cjsf.ca. You can stream Endeavors as well as your other favorite CJSF shows. And also you can listen to us on Telus HD channel 7014. It's a great, great, great show today. We have two great music groups and a nice little filmmaker sandwiched in between the two of you, the German vegan sandwich, I am calling this episode. Our first musical guest is a singer-songwriter from Forest, Ontario. Her new album is Torrential, and it features a song with astronaut Commander Chris Hadfield, who, of course, went into space in 2012, 2013, and took over command of the International Space Station, first Canadian to do so. She also helped him produce his Zero Gravity cover version of David Bowie's A Space Oddity, filmed in and on the International Space Station. She is M. Griner. And you'll be hearing from her in just a few minutes. You'll also hear from another great Canadian group of the ska punk variety. They just celebrated 20 years as a band. Hard to believe some bands don't even last 5. These guys have lasted 20. And ska punk, they are part of the third wave of the ska movement. Really, really sort of revived the whole ska punk culture. I had the privilege of seeing them live back in 2005 when they opened for Simple Plan and Headley. They are the Planet Smashers, and their new album is Mixed Messages. And you'll be hearing from Planet Smashers' Dave Collier a little later on in the program. And you'll also hear from great German sociologist and filmmaker Mark Pierschel. Mark has a new documentary out called Live and Let Live, which promotes veganism as a healthy alternative lifestyle. Mark himself has been vegan for 10 years. The film features a number of interviews with such luminaries as T. Colin Campbell, who, of course, was the author of The China Syndrome, as well as ethicist and philosopher and sort of the father of animal rights, in a way, philosophy, Dr. Peter Singer. And you'll also hear from vegans and vegan farmers, organic farmers, and a German couple who is home to the first retirement community for cows. So once again, the film is Live and Let Live, and the director is Mark Pierschel. And the film will be screening in Vancouver tomorrow night, Tuesday, April 15th, at Vancouver Harbor Center. But right now we're going to start with a song from M. Griner off her album Torrential. This is So Easy, and it features the one, the only, Commander Chris Hadfield. Enjoy.
All alone in the black, where you made friends with stage with your band. I saw you in the quicksand, but man, how fast did you move? Still sang a song with your guts. You never looked down on your luck. You've had three heartbeats inside of you.
That was So Easy by M. Griner featuring Chris Hadfield off M's album Torrential. It's a great album. It is out now. It was just released, actually, on Tuesday, April the 8th. Right now, you'll hear an interview with M. Griner about the making of the album, how she came to be involved with Chris Hadfield, and also a few other musician things. Enjoy. This is M. Griner. Phone now is musician M. Griner. M, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So the new album is Torrential, and from what I've read, this was sort of a reflection of your last decade or so, which there's been a lot of change for you. Can you sort of elaborate on how this particular project came together?
Well, I guess this album, my last record was a best of, which I often joke I should just rename I Tried My Best. but I think after I put out the best of, I sort of thought, well, I'm sort of done with the solo thing, and I have another band. But I just thought life got a little bit crazy for a while, and I felt like I needed to write songs again, so that's when I just decided to do this record. And I worked with a producer who's Canadian but lives in LA, and we did a lot of it over email, actually, and I think that can be a risky way of recording, but I think it served the project well because we both kind of knew what we were doing.
Now, I know you released your first record almost 20 years ago. How different are you from then, would you say, both artistically and on a personal level?
Quite a bit. I think, like, early on, my goals were pretty different. I really wanted to, you know, sell a zillion records and be all over the place. And shortly after I signed a deal, I got dropped, and it kind of forced me to answer, you know, like, what do I really like about the music business or about music? And I just felt like I liked the songwriting so much, so I just wrote a whole bunch of new songs and just found a way to record them. And that's been sort of the indie mentality, you know, whether it was by choice or not, it's kind of all about survival. So yeah, and then getting a job like singing with David Bowie, for example, answered a lot of the questions that I had regarding, like, you know, getting famous and all that stuff. So a lot of my questions were answered by about, you know, maybe 10 years ago. And then I've just been kind of finding my way back to what I really love to do since then.
I don't know, when I was reading up on this album, it mentions a little bit sort of you're trying to balance out motherhood with maintaining your music career. What's been the hardest thing in that aspect for you?
It's not really what people would expect. You know, the fact that it's like doing two jobs at once is hard, but I think it's just the surprise that you're taken by with this new role of taking care of little humans. For me, it was a little bit painful to sort of like examine yourself, and I think that having kids forces you to like look at yourself in a way that you haven't before, because you get all your childhood stuff brought up, and then you think about what really matters to you, and there were a lot of like really hard lessons to learn, and it's hard to learn those lessons when you're sleep deprived and, you know, taking it all a little bit too seriously. I think we live in a culture that kind of doesn't have a lot of support for parents. So it was just kind of dealing with that, and I think I've been a little bit intense about it. And other people, I think the more kids you have, the more chilled out you are. So I should probably just have 10 more and see how it goes.
How would you describe your process as a writer?
It's pretty simple. Like, it's just a case of not being able to say what it is that you want to say, and having the help of, you know, a piano or a guitar to help you get those words out. I find it very difficult to write with other people. I've done some co-writing, but any sort of co-writing is sort of done by, you know, back and forth exchange, or like, I find it very hard to like write lyrics in the same room as someone. It's sort of like if you were to write a really personal letter to someone, you wouldn't want someone, you know, helping you with it. So
yeah,
it's just kind of about finding some time by yourself to say what you want to say.
How does someone like you, you know, from a small town outside of Sarnia, become a backing musician for Bowie at the age of 24?
That was really just about travel. At that point in my life, I was really interested in being in New York City, and I just happened to be playing a show, and I met one of the other band members, and it kind of, like, I definitely wouldn't say I was the most qualified person to take that job, but it was just kind of about being in the right place and having the right attitude about learning these songs.
On that note, did it feel a little bit like your life came full circle when you collaborated and helped produce Chris Hadfield's cover of Space Oddity, given that you played with Bowie?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's almost like being in Bowie's band prepared me for that event, because in a lot of ways I'm not more proud of what, you know, I did with Chris, but it was something new, you know. It wasn't something that had been done before. So I think I was also very happy to be old enough to kind of see that project was about Chris and not about me or Joe, the producer. You know, we were there to kind of like champion his moment in space. So I'm kind of proud of that in a way, like, you know, of the ability to be able to step back and, you know, you start off wanting to be super famous, and then you find some wisdom, I think, down the road to see where you fit in. And I definitely feel like I figured that out by the time we did Space Oddity.
And I know Chris appears on another track of your album.
Yeah. We did some co-writing. You know, I say I'm not good at co-writing, but we kind of just hammered out some chords on his porch at his cottage last summer, and we wrote a song called So Easy. We kind of traded lyrics back and forth, and he's actually a really brilliant lyricist. Not a lot of people would know that. And I think it turned out well. It's kind of like a retro, like, anthem, just about his life in space and then about my psychosis, so...
So, on that note, would you say that you have a favorite track off of Torrential?
That's a hard one. I don't know. I kind of like some of the the slower songs, like Sundown on Us and Mammoth Ache. They are sort of like, they were very difficult to write. And I don't like necessarily listening to them, but I think that I'm proud that I was able to say some things, sort of get them out of my system in those songs.
Well, the album is Torrential, and it was just released, and M's going to be playing at the Railway Club in Vancouver on April the 25th. M. Greiner, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
And that was M. Greiner. And you're going to hear another song now from M off of her album Torrential. And this is one of her favorites, Mammoth of Ache.
Juggling.
Mammoth of Ace by M. Griner off of her album Torrential, executive produced by the great Joe Corcoran. All right, this is Endeavors on CGSF and 90.1 FM, CGSF.ca, TELUS HD channel 7014. Got a couple of announcements for you, and then we'll be right back with Mark Pearshall. All hail Poetry Slam. I love Poetry Slam. You should check that out. It's a great, great event. Slam poetry is something that's sort of... it's always been around, and it's always been in the underground, but it's more and more people are discovering its potential for change, and you know, it's just it's real heart. Speaking of heart, my next guest is a sociologist from Germany, as well as a film director. His latest film, which will be screening in Vancouver tomorrow, April 15th, is Live and Let Live, about veganism, the vegan food industry, vegan as in, you know, environmental and health benefits. He also was previously director of Edge, the movie about the straight edge movement in the States, and he also is the author of a vegan cookbook called Vegan Lecker Lecker. It's German, of course, but it's full of nice, easy vegan recipes. Live and Let Live features many interviews with luminaries and scientific experts, such as T. Colin Campbell, author of The China Syndrome, as well as philosopher and ethicist Dr. Peter Singer, whose essay in 1975 was sort of considered the birth of the animal rights movement, if you will. But it all, in addition to those guys, and it's which is great that it has those experts, but it also has sort of regular people too, I guess you could say. It's got organic farmers. It's got a German couple who own the first known retirement village for cows in Germany. They are Jan Gerdest and Karin Mück in Butenjagingen, Germany. My pronunciation is terrible, I know. And it also, Peter Singer mentioned, who's the professor of bioethics at Princeton. T. Colin Campbell, of course. It features Will Potter, author of Green is the New Red, Tom Regan, philosophy professor, and George Roger, who's the chairman of the Vegan Society. Features Animal Equality's Sharon Nunez, all the way from Spain. Neil Robinson, who is an organic farmer. And I should go back about George Rogers, the chair of the Vegan Society. And of course, Vegan Society was started by Donald Watson back in 1944. And he's also the sort of, he coined the word vegan, if you will. And George conducted the last interview with Donald Watson before he passed away. And one of the more interesting stories is Aaron Adams, who's the chef at Portobello Trattoria in Portland. Portobello is a vegan Italian restaurant. And Aaron was a butcher for many years and used to offer foie gras, veal, and rabbit. But now he's gone vegan, and he uses organic, seasonal, and regional ingredients to create his constantly changing menu. The film is Live and Let Live, and I spoke with director Mark Pearshall over the weekend. Excuse me. Joining me on the phone now is filmmaker Mark Pearshall, director of the new film Live and Let Live. Mark, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This is a very fascinating film, and we're seeing a lot more documentaries being made about food and food culture and the food industry. For you, what was the impetus or the genesis of this project?
Well, I started making this film a matter about my book, I've been a vegan for 10 years now, and I wrote a book in 2011 in German that included everything, all kind of experiences, kind of a guidebook for people who are interested in veganism and the vegan diet. And when I was writing the book, I had the idea to make a documentary out of that, because I think a documentary is way more accessible for a lot of people. And so, yeah, I started in 2011, and I finished 2013, and premiere was November 2013 in Germany.
You said you wrote the book in German, and yet the movie, the documentary is, I mean, there are some German interviews, but it's predominantly in English. Why did you decide to go that route? Was it just the accessibility of the message?
It was just people that we met and thought were interesting for the film. It's all most of the experts and the philosophers and the scientists are English speaking, so it's because of that. And then we have found a few people. We've interviewed six people who all have different stories on how they got into veganism, like from an ethical, ecological, or from a health perspective. And some of these speak German, some speak English.
Why was it important for you to include both sides, both sort of just the regular people who are vegan and talking about it from a more, you know, personal, compassionate perspective, as well as, you know the food scientists, the biologists, the philosophers, and the experts?
I think that the personal stories are very interesting. For example, we have Aaron Adams from Portobello in Portland, Oregon. He used to be a butcher, and he had a restaurant for French cuisine and was serving veal and foie gras. And then one day he decided that he couldn't live with doing that and closed down the restaurant. And then later he opened up a vegan restaurant in Portland, Oregon. It's stories like that are really interesting for people, I think. It's more interesting than just seeing gruesome footage or animal abuse and slaughterhouse footage. Yeah, I think that is a different approach, and I think it's more interesting.
Do you remember what the impetus for you was to first become vegan?
Yeah, I watched a documentary called Baraka, and there was a scene where young chicks are being sorted, the male and the female chicks, and I was vegetarian at that time, and I didn't know anything about that. And then I looked into it, and it was just something I couldn't live with, and so I decided to be vegan.
I'm curious as to what the process was like for you finding all these people to talk to. I mean, you've got some big names like Peter Singer and Colin Campbell. How did you go about approaching these people, saying, "Hey, we're making a film about veganism and animals"?
Mm-hmm. Well, most of them are based on the book. I did some research for the book, and those were the people that interested me the most. So for the film, I just approached them by email and phone, and it was really easy to get them convinced to do an interview with us for the movie, and it was just a little bit more difficult to find the time with them to do the interview.
Yeah,
it was just
easy. One of the things that I've noticed, and it's, I like that you include both sort of the American side and the European side, and it seems that there's almost a different approach to food and food culture in the States. There are congressmen that are actively pushing against, you know, the First Lady's healthy lifestyle initiative, and in Europe, people just seem to be more relaxed about it. What are some of the things you've noticed, you know, interviewing people on both sides of the water?
I don't really know. I mean, in Germany right now, veganism is really growing really, really quickly. We have there's a vegan supermarket chain that's opening supermarkets in all big cities, and we have around 200 vegan cookbooks now, and it's just there's a lot more awareness now for the subject, and it's all in all newspapers and magazines and on the TV constantly. So I don't know why that is. It might have been because of bunch of food scandals where there was bad meat, or we had a scandal where they found horse meat in lasagna. So that might be because of that, but I don't know. And but it's a great trend. I don't know where it's going, but it's certainly something very positive.
Why do you think the U.S. though, or certain people in the U.S. are either reluctant to deal with this issue or just are pushing against it? Does a lot of it have to do with politics?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of lobby groups that have an interest, of course, in keeping it the way it is and having people to consume animal products, because there's a huge industry behind it. It's certainly the same in Germany, but it might have been a different connection between the industry and the politics. So, but I don't know too much about that to judge.
Talk about, you know, when people think of veganism, you think, oh, you know, it's just, you know, you're a hippie, you're trying to be nice and save all the animals. But, you know, since you've been vegan for 10 years, talk about some of the health benefits that you personally have noticed in your body.
I don't know, it's just it's really easy for to be vegan nowadays. I think I feel a lot more cleaner after a meal. I don't have that heavy feeling after a meal.
Yeah.
And when I do sports, I feel that I have really faster recovery times. And I heard that from a lot of other vegans as well. And it just feels better to, recover quicker and be able to last longer when you're doing endurance sports.
Yeah. I've heard some people say, you know, chefs, for example, that being vegan or you know, not eating meat is a Western luxury. And, you know, if you lived in the bush in Africa, for example, you're going to eat what's available to you. How do you respond to something like that?
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, you have to have a choice, first of all, to make a choice. So certain tribes or certain indigenous people obviously don't have that freedom that we have.
Right.
So I'm not going to judge them for not being vegan.
One of the aspects that I really liked that your film talked about was the environmental impact of eating meat. And a lot of people don't initially link climate change with food consumption, but I know, for example, the amount of energy that it takes to, you know, create ground beef from cows is far worse than anything any of us imagine, and it's far worse than cars. Talk about some mm-hmm. of the stuff you learned in terms of the relationship between what we eat and our climate.
Okay, yeah. Well, first of all, there's the land use. You know, you have to produce huge amounts of feed for the cattle. And then that takes up a lot of the land we use and, for example, destroys huge parts of the rainforest just for soy feed mostly.
Yeah.
And then that's just a very inefficient use because we feed these all these crops to the animals and then eat the animals, while as well, if we would consume the crops directly, it would be far more energy efficient and way beneficial for the environment.
But I think there's also a flip side to that. You know, with a lot of farmers these days, we're either seeing, you know, crops being sprayed with harmful pesticides, or we're seeing, you know, monoculture where just one crop keeps growing larger and larger and larger because of all the all the chemicals we're putting on that. So how do we counteract that?
You mean for the feed use or for
You know, and the people will say, well, you know, they're doing what we're doing to the meat, they're now doing the same thing to the vegetables as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think it's important not just to stop at veganism. I think it's important to question everything we consume. So as well, like where the food comes from, what's behind, who produced your food. So for me personally, I look at everything I consume or I eat, and I look where it's coming from, and if it's, I don't know, if it's sprayed pesticides or if it's made in sweatshops. So So veganism is just like one step for me, but I don't see it as a final destination, sort of.
And I know one of your earlier pieces was on the straight edge movement. And how do you think that the straight edge movement and veganism are linked in any way?
There's a certain part of the straight edge movement consists of vegans or vegetarians, and it's just it's partly political. So people at like at shows or bands talk about these issues, and so the fans or the crowd gets more aware of these issues, and then they start thinking about their own habits or lifestyles.
I know from people that I've talked to that one of the myths and misconceptions about veganism and organics and healthy lifestyles that it's more expensive, but that's not exactly true, is it?
Well, it depends on how you what you eat, because there are certain like meat analogs or cheese analogs that are that are expensive for sure, but there's lots of just grains and vegetables and fruits that are really cheap. So it really depends on how you like to eat. And I mean, at the start, if you want to change from a regular diet to veganism, it's really easy because there's so many vegan options now that you can just have a burger or a pizza that exactly tastes the same. So I mean, at the start, it's really easy, but then you can just, I mean, for me, when I went vegan, I discovered all these new recipes and these new foods that I didn't even know about. So because I got more into cooking and I had to cook for myself, and I found all these new, this whole world of vegetables and fruits, and it was really exciting.
How you first became vegan 10 years ago, how much easier is it now to be a vegan than it was back then?
It's way easier because there's so many more cookbooks, and there's so many more just options where you can get vegan foods. Like, you can get regular supermarkets, you can get it online. There's so many more restaurants, and on the internet, it's just vegan starter kits, websites, and books, and it's just way easier than it was 10 years ago.
Well, the film is Live and Let Live, and it'll be screening in Vancouver on Tuesday, April the 15th at SFU Harbor Center downtown. Mark Pearshall, thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Don.
Cheers. Radio Goethe with Arndt Palmer. Okay. Coming up now, we have the Planet Smashers all the way from Montreal to celebrate their 20th anniversary. This is in song, author, album, Mixed Messages. Here is You Guys Are Assholes? Let's Party.
Tonight we get blacked out. You guys are assholes. Let's party. You guys are assholes. assholes. Let's party. You guys are 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 assholes. Let's party.
You guys are assholes. Let's party by the Planet Smashers. I misidentified Planet Smashers singer and founder's name earlier as Dave Collier. It's Matt Collier, and Matt is who I spoke with this last week when talking about mixed messages. So here is me with Matt Collier. Phone with me now is Matt Collier of the Planet Smashers. Matt, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on.
So the new album is Mixed Messages.
Yeah.
Do you remember sort of what the seed for this project was?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. Actually, it's not that hard. Basically, it was we're turning 20, and if we don't have a new record out, then we might as well not turn 20. So there you have it, you know? It's kind of like, you know, what are you doing this for? Is it, you know, is it for new music or just reliving your past? I would say it's for reliving my... Oh, no, I mean new music. I'm kidding. But no, seriously, we were... We booked a couple of shows out west because we hadn't been out in so long. And then, you know, the next step was, man, and we're turning 20 next year. We probably should do a new record. So we talked about it for about 3 months. Didn't do anything. Didn't jam once on new songs. We were just doing old ones. And then beginning of January rolls around. And Scott, our drummer, is like, guys, we have, like... 3 months before we're out west, so we got to do a record. We recorded, wrote it, and recorded it in about a month, and that was that.
That seems a pretty quick time. Was the fact that you were going on tour and you had this anniversary, did that expedite the process for you?
Mm-hmm. Totally. I mean, it was kind of like we had a reason, we had a goal. You know, like it was very specific from the label. You know. Point of view is, you know, if you don't have it by this date, you don't have a new record. So we made it exactly to that date. We handed it in on February 8th, and the record's coming out on April 8th, which is pretty much the least amount of time you can have to put out a record, apparently. So, yeah, man, we're putting it out. We have a video that's about to come out. It might not come out tomorrow, but it'll be pretty soon. I saw the first cut of it. It's ridiculous. We get beaten up by a bunch of roller derby girls. And I like broke my rib. Not really, it's bruised, but it hurts when I sneeze. But come on, it was worth it.
How does it feel for you? You know, both personally and artistically, that you guys have reached this milestone together as a band.
It's surprising. To be quite honest, it's surprising. I don't feel like it's been 20 years that the Smashers have been around. I feel like, I still feel good about it. Like, I don't feel like I'm beating a dead horse. You know, when we were touring hard, nonstop, like around 2007, this is after we've been touring for about a decade, nonstop, like doing 200 shows a year, it felt like I was beating a dead horse, let me tell you. So we took a break. And then when we came back, everything felt fresh again. It was fun. It was, everyone was happy to be around each other. All the old, you know, stresses of being on the road and wanting to kill your bandmates, all that stuff had dissipated, and we're really fortunate. You know, we didn't. No one took anything that stress we had at the end there. No one took that too seriously, and with a bit of time, you know, we were lucky again, came back, and now we have two new records that have come out in the last 3 years, which is really good, as far as I'm concerned, because we all have real lives now. You know, we don't tour heavy anymore. So we jam a lot, we have a good time, we drink together, we go out, we goof around, go to roller derby together. We don't play in it, we just watch.
Anyway. 20 years is a long time. Many bands and artistic projects, you know, don't last a decade. What do you attribute the longevity to?
Well, it's a few things. I think the first one is that we don't take ourselves too, like, we never took ourselves seriously, you know, so... Everything that came along was kind of like, wow, that's pretty cool. We never took anything for granted. We never took any particular moment but being on stage and on a big show, and we never thought, you know, we're rock stars. We always just thought, well, that was fun. fun. I want to do that again. That was cool. And the music we play is fun. It's you know, it's about having a good time. And you know, those are two big things. We kept to that. And you know, there was a point where we could have broken up after 2007, but instead we just sort of went our ways. And I guess now it's all about having a good time again entirely. Like the guys are, we're rolling out in about 30 minutes in the van to start the tour, and the first drive is like 21 hours, I think. Sounds terrible, but everyone's super happy.
Yeah.
Like this is gonna be great. I don't know what we're smoking, but we are, I mean, nothing. But you know,
yeah.
Maybe we should change that. But you know, it's just I think now it's just we're fortunate to be doing it. You know, it's just
yeah.
That's the thing now. But back in the day, it was we were just playing music that we enjoyed to play, and it made us have a good time.
What would you say to yourself 20 years ago?
Wow. Again, don't take yourself too seriously, and don't give up. Just keep on doing it. Don't expect anybody to do anything for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's great when someone does. That's cool. But don't sit around and wait for someone to do something for you, you know? It's better to try and effectively fail than it is just to sit around and wait for a record label to sign you or for a booking agent to book you a gig or for a radio station to play you before you go do something. Just go do it. I mean, you're going to make friends. It might not be the fastest way to stardom. You may not ever get to it.
Right.
But it's better than just sitting on your ass.
So as an artist, we can't be afraid of failure, then.
Yeah, absolutely. You cannot. You just got to go for it. And if people don't like it, you know, F them. You know, whatever. If you're proud of what you did, that's all that really matters when it comes down to it. I know that sounds really hippie and but that's it. You know,
yeah, yeah.
Do what you think is fun. I mean, like, when we write Smasher tunes, for us, it's, you know, we're writing songs about what we would like to hear if we wanted to party, you know?
Yeah.
Aside from other forms of music, but you know what I mean. Like, this would make me party, you know.
So do you guys consider yourself a party band?
Pretty much. I mean, we do write songs about. Like, if you listen to, you know, further into the records, there's some serious tunes and there's some love songs here and there. But ultimately, we are a party band. You know, what it is. You know, we're a party band. That's what people do. You know, they get festive. They get happy. You don't leave a Smasher show upset.
That's for sure.
Unless we played really badly, which can happen. People don't care.
I'm curious. You know, you mentioned earlier there about, you know, not waiting for a record company to, you know, come and sign you. Was that part of your impetus for starting Stomp Records? Was it a way to get your albums out there?
Yeah, it totally was. We tried. When 94, we tried to get signed. I think it was Raw Energy. I don't remember this label. They were pretty cool labels from Toronto. It put out King Apparatus, like Random Killing, and a few other pretty cool bands back then. But I thought, you know, they were a big record label, but they weren't. They were just a bunch of dudes putting out records in their kitchen, you know. At the time, I thought they were like, well, we didn't get signed to that label, and, you know, we didn't decide to. I sent Dats, you know, cassettes out to tons of labels, and nothing came back. So I was like, well, I guess we just have to make our own label. And at the time, there was a local Montreal band doing the same thing, couldn't get signed. They were a ska band. There was two of us. And at first, it was going to be a split 7-inch. And then we started hearing about other Canadian ska bands across the country. And this is before you had internet. You know, and I remember phoning friends, like friends from college that were going to UBC. And they'd be like, hey, if you know any ska bands, tell them to contact me. And it was all like written hand letters and stuff. It's pretty funny. And that's what happened. We came up with that compilation, called Canadian One, and that was the beginning of Stomp.
I've heard you guys described as sort of ska punk, and it seems that you guys were sort of right at the heart of sort of the third wave revival of ska music, and we're seeing sort of a lot more of the style that perhaps you guys helped usher in. What is it about sort of the melding of ska, sort of, you know, island music and hardcore punk music that seems to work?
Inevitably, I just can't write dirty reggae or traditional ska tunes because it just doesn't feel honest to me. It's not me, you know. So I used to listen to punk rock when I was a kid and some ska, but mainly punk rock. And that's just my influences. You know, same with Dave. You know, he was a bit more, also a bit of some metal. So I mean,
Yeah.
The four on the floor drive that you hear all the time. I mean, the kick drum is pretty much always four on the floor, which is pretty much hair rock. It comes down to it.
Yeah.
So those, you just can't get away from it. It's just, you know, what you were listening to, what your older brother made you listen to when you were a kid, and those things influenced what you did. So it's just the reality of it. We were a suburban, not anymore, but you know, at the time I was a suburban white kid, really into ska and punk rock, and that's what happened.
And finally, would you say you have a favorite song off of Mixed Messages?
Oh, Tear It Up is a great tune. I mean, it's one of my favorite that we've, one of my favorites that we've ever written. There's a few others there that I really am proud of, like You Guys Are Assholes, Let's Party. Classic Smashers.
I like that just on the title alone, Classic Smashers.
It is. It's like, well, there's your textbook Smashers song.
Yeah. Well, the Planet Smashers are in Vancouver on April the 17th. And that was Matt Collier from Planet Smashers. This has been Endeavors on CGSF 90.1 FM. We're going to take you out with Tear It Up off of Mixed Messages by the Planet Smashers. Stay tuned for Strep Throat Radio with Matt. We'll see you next week. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Wish I'd spent them with you. Don't need to wish for more. The vows repeat to some such chore. I don't need to think this through. I wanna waste my time with you. Tear it up, tear it up. Oh, we're gonna tear it up, tear it up. Yeah, we're gonna tear it up, tear it up. Anything, 'cause I didn't make them with you. I don't need to wish for more. Lives repeat to some such chore.